بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيتها النفس المطمئنة ارجعي إلى ربك راضية مرضية فادخلي في عبادي وادخلي جنتي. O soul that finds satisfaction, that found its satisfaction. So where it's found its satisfaction, it finds its satisfaction in the obedience of Allah Ta'ala. So man has worked on the soul and brought it to a level where its satisfaction is only in the pleasure of Allah Ta'ala, in the obedience of Allah Ta'ala. The human soul, if it's just left unchecked, uncultivated, wild, then that soul is imprisoned, it's jailed in its pleasure and temptation. Everything that is enjoyable, everything that is conforming to its pleasures, it runs after that. And strangely, my analysis is a normal Western life, maybe I think 60% or 70% of the wealth, energy and time is just running after pleasure. See, entertainment, right? How much of our time goes just in entertainment? People are in sports or they're after sports, either the sportsmen or their chelas, their slaves. Sport event, I need to go and see this, I need to watch it. So either the participants or their supporters, right? So how much of time is consumed just for that? Number one, right? Sports events. Then again, look at this Western life. Then how much of time is going out in entertainment, pleasure, entertainment, the party here, party around the corner, is some celebration, so attend that. So much of time, effort and money just in that. In that you can also include weddings, right? Doesn't have to be only our weddings, but everybody's weddings. And how much of partying, how much of money, how much of time, energy is just gone on that. Then, I don't think any person living in a Western country is safe from this. A motor vehicle, right? How much of money is gone just on that? If you didn't have the vehicle, you're still carrying on with your life. Now you got the vehicle, apart from your basic needs, how much of the vehicle is required? Wife, if you got no takasas, the wife has no takasa. That uncle, this one here, this friend here, that mall, there's a show there, there's a baby show here, there's a show and tell here, there's a nursery coming up here, so you need to go for all this. Time, wealth and energy, everything is burnt out. There was one old man that used to come here, Suleiman Mutala. Nice, simple person, but he'll talk nice things. You know this Nellis, the supervision. So he had a good position amongst them. So one day he's telling me, came for etikaf in the top masjid. His observation, I liked his observation. He says, you know, when there's a sale, then I don't like to go into a sale. I said, why? What's wrong? You're getting half the price, three quarter of the price. He says, see, I feel the whole exercise is more expensive than you buying something at the corner shop. This is why. So you see, you're going to a sale, right? The difficulty to go into the sale, park your car rightly, and get into the sale. Because like you are wanting something special, there's hundreds of people, so you bumper to bumper with people. Right? All that discomfort, going to park your car, going into the crowd, bumping into people, they bumping into you, right? Then you have to wait so long to get the service done, then jump back into your car, then come back. You know, it at least will take you about 4 or 5 hours. Right? In that 4 or 5 hours, how much you could have done? Right? One is, alright, you could have done something in your home, you could have relaxed. You could have gone earlier to the masjid, read some siparas. You could have so much have done. But just that you could save, say, 100 rand, 200 rand there, you went and wasted that 5 hours. And apart from all that, the frustration, you know, mental frustration that you have to get into the crowd, go there, buy that stuff, come back. Then with all the music blasting in your ears, and your eardrums are bursting out. And then, as you come into the namaz, that music is still playing in your ears. Then the things that you see there, then to delete that picture is not easy. You know, so people are not dressed right. Women, men, everybody is there, but you have to go to that sale. Absolutely not difficult. It's just a little bit of adjustment of time, the right management of time. You can do it. Start it off and you'll see how much your time, how much of your time is saved in fashion, just amusing yourself. Then when you get into this life, then a holiday is like an obligation. It's a compulsory thing. And one is now the person that is very wealthy, for him, or we're not talking about that person. But now the average sees this person, he can go, why can't I go? The schooling the same school, the children are schooling the same school. So the average is watching the wealthy, right? But he's going out for a holiday. So he's feeling that he's left out. So he falls into a depression. I'm telling you what some psychiatrist told me, that this average class, they're falling into depression when they talk about these stories, discuss it with their wealthy friends. Alright, you know, we tried to be like them, but we couldn't manage it. And we feel so depressed that we don't have the money to enjoy like how you are enjoying. And that brings you to a depression, you have to go for antidepressants. I'm telling you now, one psychiatrist told me, a reliable person, told me at least about 40% of the cases because of this. 40%. I was surprised. I think we're living in a blast here, so we don't know what's going on. But he told me at least 35-40% are going into a depression. They're comparing themselves with their brothers that are wealthy or their friends that are wealthy. But someone is wealthy, but now we need to also enjoy like how they enjoy. They got that type of car, that type of holiday, that type. Then to make it worse, this psychiatrist thing, what they do, now the brother went for holiday, right? He's got the money. So he went for holiday. So his children will take a photo. This is the first class, you know, business class we booked in for take a photo. Booking into a hotel, this is the hotel, right? This is our first class card, you know, ticket, look at that. The type of meals that we ate, we enjoyed. The type of place that we had gone. Now this person, the more he's listening to it, hey, I don't have the wealth, my father doesn't have it. Wow, I was born into this family, I could have been born into a wealthy family. So he's aspiring and aspiring and aspiring. He becomes restless, he can't sleep, he's suffering from insomnia. Then he has to go to see a psychiatrist. But where it started from this point? See this lavish. It was his fault. Why he had to discuss these things? You don't have the money, then be happy with what you've got. Got the money, we don't say don't enjoy it. Don't waste. But now, don't relate these things. Don't discuss these things. Imam Ghazali, rahmatullah, he says that you got something good, right? See, it's the season has just come in, and you got the seasonal fruit, like a mango or something, looking like delicious, color, shape, all that, right? He says, the right thing is to share it with your neighbors as well. Muslim or non-Muslim, share it with them. Ibn Umar radiyallahu anhu, was his habit, he was very committed amongst the Sahaba Kiram, that he's like proverbial, about being committed to the sunnah. So there's a new thing that came out, that he'll say, Jarukumul Yahudi, your Yahudi neighbor, you'll send something across. Your Yahudi neighbor, and you send something, did you send something across? Sufyan ibn Uyayna, I think it was him, rahimahullah. So his house was up for sale. In fact, not his house, the neighbor's house was up for sale. Not Sufyan, but the neighbor's house was up for sale. So he gave the price, 200,000 whatever. So man says that offering the money, he said, but this is more 100,000. He said, no, what you're saying is right. This person that is selling is a non-Muslim, and the purchaser is a Muslim. So he says, what you're saying is right, it's 100,000. But 100,000 is because of being in the neighborhood of Sufyan ibn Uyayna. See that? So, what I'm getting at, how much of our time is just gone in because we are entrapped, we are imprisoned with what? With our luxuries. Fashion, we need to have it. Our children need to have it. They must have this. They must have this. And my experience is, the child that went up the ladder of education with little difficulty, generally he becomes much more intelligent, much more prosperous than the child that had everything on the plate. He's working hard, he's searching, researching, finding out, I have a limited budget, I have to work. You know, one friend of mine was showing me, I see these three people came from Chatsworth. He's talking about his day, it's about 40 years ago. And one is a head of a super multinational company based in England, he's there. One is in America, he's also head. And the third one is, I think, Australia, he's also the head. But he says, we studied together. At the time of their studies, how they were so poor, sometimes they couldn't afford to take the bus back home to Chatsworth. So we used to be a little bit of a Jamaat Khana in the varsity. We should allow them to sleep there. We might sleep here. Tomorrow morning we'll carry on. But that was the state when they started off. But with that difficulty, pain, hardship, they appreciated. When they appreciated, they escalated. But their mistake was thereafter that they said to themselves that, see, we went through this difficulty. We don't want our children to go through that difficulty. But for the children to go up, they need to go through the same ladder. If they relaxed, they can't. You can't expect that the type of progress. In two matters I've seen in life, that it doesn't work with comforts. One is education, and one is molding the child, getting the right values. If there's too much of luxuries, it can't. Doesn't this work? I don't say that. Don't give the child the right stuff. Give him the right stuff. He's doing mental works for something for the mind. But now you're spoiling with this, spoiling him with that, spoiling him with that. And then you want him to escalate. He can't. It can't happen. Either his values will go off or his education will go off. And you're wondering where he went off. You've got growing children. Then you get grandchildren. And it's a concern that, they need to be steady in their lives. They need to be steady in their values. Now, you didn't get one of the two right, you're off. All right. The values may be more important than the wealth itself. He doesn't have that amount of wealth, but he's got very rich values. He comes, for example, child comes in to the house, he'll first make salam loudly, then come and visit, he'll come and talk to his elders. For example, he's in the madrasa or in a varsity. After 2 weeks or something, he comes to meet. Right? He can't meet them regularly because of his studies. He's boarding. So once in 2 weeks, a fortnight or something. So now the values that the child has got. So he comes and meets his father, his mother. Assalamu alaikum. Sit down a little bit with them. This was the report for the last 2 weeks. Same what happened in the varsity or the madrasa, what they came across, what the ustad must have explained. So all that. Then he sees now it's a hot day or it's a cool day. And I can make good coffee, so let me make the coffee and present it to my parents. And then He wants to go somewhere. So maybe he says to his parents, the friends are getting together after Maghrib, can I go? Should I go? Now, how pleased the father doesn't feel, even if he didn't excel too much. Now, the other child is the one, I'm sure real stories are real stories, excelled very well, excelled, right? But there's no values in him. When there's no values in him, we have cases like this. I can tell you firsthand because you have cases like that. They've excelled, but somehow down the line, that values went instilled into that child. So, the son himself comes, but the father, please take him into the old age. He's a handful man. The son is talking about the father, he's a handful, just keep him here. We can't manage. Do you see values? So he's asked, but why can't you manage him? You're so wealthy. Between your three brothers, you're earning so much. You're earning more than 200,000 between three of y'all. But why can't you keep some? But we need to go for Umrah and all these things here. So who's going to take care of this old man? Now, I ask you now, the man is over 80 now. How does he feel? He doesn't have a heart, doesn't have any emotions, any feelings. You got a person coming, aged mother is over 70, right? Just dump her here, She's too difficult to manage. We can't. The man, he doesn't even hurt, he just leaves. The mother is crying. And he's just running away. He's just, hey, I'm going. Just dump the woman, not even showing any type of remorse. She's too difficult to handle. You look after her. I'm going away. See that cold feeling. So what must have happened is they may have given the education no values. This education was all about making money. But you see this money, where it brought the person. Today they're earning so much, but their parents are like dirt or like a spanner in the works. They can't handle the parents. So we don't say that don't progress, but not at the expense of your values. He didn't have so much, but he showed values, respect, love, attention. And I think it's more than what you can bargain for. He didn't have so much. Maybe instead of having a delicacy every week, he has it in 3 weeks. But the child has got so much of respect, love, attention. He talks so nicely. And when he comes back, he will not just dart in the house, just come in, leave his stuffs, and he's darting out. We don't even know when he's coming, when he's going. And we're scared. The parents will actually say, we are scared of telling him anything, because he may just run away. Or he may just kick up a tantrum. Or he's big. He may just give me one punch. What will happen to me? See? So he's so scared, he can't even tell the child anything. But these are all realities. See this lavish style, lavish life, and the end it brings you to. So, we're talking of the nafs at the entry level. At the entry level, it's just blocked off. It's tied to its pleasures. It wants its pleasure. It doesn't have it, it'll keep crying. The child, if it saw that ice cream vendor, Ma, I must have that ice cream. Ma, I must have that ice cream. Cried, went, pestered the mother, until the mother said, all right, take this and buy that thing. So that grown-up person also, he's tied in his temptation, in his pleasure. He says, no, I must have this. He'll go to any extent just to get this, to secure that. See that. So the whole mind is just working in the fulfillment of temptation. Nothing else, just temptation, pleasure, comfort. I must have this holiday. He doesn't have that holiday, now he's falling to a depression. There was one accountant came here. I'm showing you this life is a problem that it brings up. So he has just gone into the profession. Now he's starting off. So he'll start off with a small salary, maybe 15,000-20,000, and then slowly he'll escalate. Now he's married, so I can understand now he'll have to pay a rental, motor car, groceries, 15,000-20,000, just break even. So you can't afford an expensive holiday, right? But in the meanwhile, his wife's parents are going. His in-laws are going for Umrah. 3-4 weeks. They loaded, they can afford it. And they will invite their daughter, you join us. Now the husband is not in, financially is not that secure, he's not at that level. When he's not at that level, so, you want to go or carry on. He's giving her, he's allowing her, but grudgingly. Now this accountant comes to me and tells me, see, I'm working in a corporate environment. Wife is gone for 1 month. Right? All mixed up. Corporate means, like, you know, all men, women, everybody, like monkeys are sitting in the same place, one floor, and they're working, right? Now, they get to know that wife is not around. So this one is advancing, this one is saying, oh, let's go for breakfast together, there's nobody at home, let's do something. So the life is just about pleasure, without any limits. You see, pleasure, unlimited pleasure. So why are they earning? For unlimited pleasure. They've got no deen, no consciousness of Allah Ta'ala. You're working in that environment, you're getting tempted, you're getting lured. I have to tell the person, why? Just take a break, please, for the sake of Allah Ta'ala, to tell the accountant, even if it is that you're going into a little bit of a loan, but you just jump in the flight and go for Umrah. Go. At the return, he told me, well, I think it was the best thing I could have done. Because I was just there. I could have done that wrong. I was just there. That thing was tempting. And she was prodding me. We're living in that type of environment. You know, it was easier for me to spend the 20, 30,000. Never mind, I get into a little bit of arrears. Than getting into this haram relationship. But how do you protect yourself? But then the parents need to understand, man is a youngster, he just got married now, he needs to come up, he needs his wife, and you're just taking her like that. You don't say that she's falling into a depression because all the family is going and I can't go. So this right values, what we aren't thinking about is the right values getting into that person. Like, the parent could have thought, right, when my wife came into my life, then I was the boss, the father was secondary then. The respect is shown by the wife to the parents was shown, but the parents became secondary, right? Primarily is the husband, and that's the law of the Sharia. Primarily after the marriage, the wife's primary obligation is to the husband, thereafter the parents. But now, because of that lavish lifestyle, now, you know, you say, who pays the piper calls the tune. So he's paying the bills. When he's paying the tune, the bills, he say, I must call the tune. I can manipulate. Not realizing that you're going to damage the home. Man is going to hold to some point. And after some time, he thinks, but I'm man, I put on the pants, and I must carry on like a woman here. I can't carry on like that. So the frustration gets a bit over him. But who's contributing? Now, then you come for the arbitration here. But you see where it stems from, it started off. Wrong values. Right. So we're talking of the nafs, and what the nafs does, the damage, and what you need to do. See, we can't, whatever it costs, we can't imitate non-Muslims. They got their own culture, their own style, everything's their own. See? So when you're imprisoned by temptation, then there's no limits, there's no God, there's no limits, that thing is just temptation. Now we're talking about this free, permissive life, free permissive life. So one person that used to be living in a white area, so simply both are wrong, whether it's a white or the black, but this permissive mindset is wrong. So, he's showing a personal account what he heard from them, from the whites, living in the white area. Maybe one, two Indians are living in the white area. You know, this expensive area is coming up, opening up. So, he's living there. So, he comes across a white. Say, I want to know your family background. Say, no, I asked my mother already, who's my father? Say, very permissive. Everybody coming, ow, jow. Meet up, you know, and now they're calling about a moderate Islam. Mix up, talk freely, however you want. So the child is asking the mother, who's my father? Real story. The child is asking, who's the father? So, you know, we talk of beans, you talk of not only burping from in front, from behind also, right? Talk of beans, they talk of a burp, right? From upwards, sometimes backwards. So the mother is telling the son, said, you know what? Men are like baked beans, you know. You don't know which bean caused that burp. You know, backwards burp. Which beans caused it, you know. And she's telling you, you know, I slept with so many people now. You know, which one caused this? Which one brought you? I don't know. Labak knows. She's a permissive society. So the whole culture is different. The styles are different. Values are different. You know, we had one friend long time now. His name was James. Then he converted into Islam. So he was mixed. Parents were mixed Jew and a Christian. So that was his parents. So then he became, from Judaism, he went on to Christianity. He became a pastor. But then he felt, hey, this doesn't seem to be right. Let me study Islam. So he studied Islam and eventually he became a Muslim and he died as a Muslim. Jamaluddin. I went and see him a couple of times. His leg was amputated. Very good, jolly. In that state, also, he's dying, but he was quite happy with the decree of Allah. I was surprised, coming from this type of background, but dying and dying happily. So he says to me, that we asked him, all right, when you talk of a person that's seen so much, so what did you find here? You did the comparison, you studied Christianity, and you studied Islam, so what's your finding? You know, what did you find? So he says, in one sentence, he must have studied very well. He couldn't have been chancing. The line that he gave was very apt. He says, Christianity is a license to sin. Because you don't have to be worried about sin. He died for you. Christ, what happened? He died for you. But he died for your sins. So you got a license to commit any wrong. You got a passport to do any wrong. Why? Because he died for your sins. So that means the passport was given to you. Now, unfortunately, now you look at life in this day and time. You know, the hadith says, لَتَتَّبِعُنَّ سُنَنَ مَنْ كَانَ قَبْلَكُمْ. Ultimately, you will follow the ways of the kuffar before you. Christians, Jews. So whatever ways they went into, so you'll follow. Now, you see the permissive culture that they made. Everything will go. The Pope, just have to give him a sad story. He'll make every type of haram permissible. Every type of haram is permissible. So I don't think there is a thing, there is a concept of prohibition. Everything is permissible. You must just call yourself a Christian, come to the church now and then, but it's enough. Pay the tithes, give us the 10%, and you carry on. Otherwise, every impermissible thing. Wine is right. In fact, that's the blood of Christ. Wine is the blood of Christ. Can sleep with so many women, it's also alright. Right? But the only crime is you mustn't get married for the second time. You can sleep so many times with so many people, that's alright. Permissible, respectable, honorable. It's an honorable lifestyle, but you mustn't get married for the second time. But now you may think, does it apply to us? So I was sitting with him, quite a wealthy industrial person, so he's quite wealthy. So he says, Mona, you know, we all are party to the sin. So I asked him, but just explain yourself, you know, my so-and-so cousin. So he lost his mother. And maybe about 8-10 years later, he lost his father. And the talk that was in that circle, now they are very wealthy, not wealthy, but very, very wealthy. So the talk that was circulating at that time, was, you know, lucky the father didn't get married again. Otherwise, 1/8 of all his properties would have been given to this woman. So he's not worried of the father getting involved in haram or not, or the discomfort of living all alone. He's not worried. So his primary concern is the wealth. See, as though the wealth is the goal. Comfort of the old man who brought up this whole empire, that's secondary. Getting himself involved in sin, etc., it's secondary. Yes. We mustn't share this with this new woman. That's the primary concern. So deen, everything goes on the side. You see where it's coming from. It's coming from this point. Everything must be permissible. Everything. So long as it doesn't hurt the pocket. It doesn't hurt the finance, it's all right. But you see the mentality. So we're asking this, Jamaluddin. So what's the difference? You know, you studied all. You went through all. You went to Judaism, then you went to Christianity, and you went to Islam. So what is the difference? So you see, it's a license to commit sin. Any sin, anything you can do. You go and cry to the papa, and you say, no, it's all right. This is also all right. Gay is also all right. Lesbian also all right. Everything is all right. But haram kya raha? So, see the hadith and the truth of the wording of the Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, that you're going to follow the people, the ways of the people of the past. So someone came up with the concept of the bank and interest and everything that became permissible. Right? Then some people came up with the concept of, you know, a woman must not be just restricted to the homes. They can go out, they can be free. You can work, go into a man corporate environment, right? Mix up, talk freely. You don't have to observe so much of parda, right? Why you don't have to? You can be a moderate Muslim. A moderate Muslim means you can be a sinful Muslim. Moderate Muslim doesn't mean that you're working with moderation. Moderation means, you know, you are balancing off. That's moderation. But the moderate Muslim, in their context, what it means? It means that you can. You don't have to be so strict. You don't have to be parda. Hijab, etc. You don't have to be. You can allow your woman to go here, school, university, everywhere. It's alright. They can do anything, but they mustn't go too deep, you know. They mustn't go too deep into it. Everything is permissible. Nothing that the mind is off, that they are doing anything haram. Mind is totally off. You know, one man came here some years back. So he says, you know, first I was also going on the same line of being a moderate Muslim. But you know, what I had to pay for it, well, I hold my ears and make tawbah, I cry to Allah Ta'ala. This is what I had, this surprise. But I was talking about moderate Islam. So he's telling me his own story, that I went for this story of moderate Islam, but where it brought me eventually. He says, I had a difference and a fallout with my wife. So we called a moderate person, counselor, whatever, professional person. We called him to counsel. So he's counseling us. Now this man is telling me, now I got three children. We had a fight. So I called this man here to advise us. So in the process of the counseling, that counselor wanted some water. So woman, it's the impulsive nature. They want to be compassionate and kind. So she brought the water and offered, and the fingers touched. And he says, "Bhai, within that week or so, they were in bed together, intimate. I got to know about it, I had to go through a divorce. Now after that divorce, it is over, she got remarried to a very wealthy person. But she's not comfortable there. She's getting money, but she can't get the love. Now she wants to come back. See, but you see this concept of moderate Islam, and it costed him his dear marriage, it costed him his children, it costed him his whole life. I'm feeling so restless, so uneasy. Now, these things you don't experiment. Now you have to experiment that thing, go through the whole divorce, go through that pain. After that, and when the children saw all the fighting, all the boom bang and the explosion, and then you come back. Now, what have you done to the memories of these children? You know, I know of cases where children, when I say children, means about 20, 24, 25, they are shivering at the idea of marriage. So, you know, what happened to our parents? We know, we're just calling it off. But where this thing starts off? The same moderate Islam. So the words that they use is too beautiful, but what goes into it, are you there at the time of the drama? Yeah, to give up this talk here, go educate yourself. What happens if something happens to this girl? What will happen? So for that type of bayan, you are very, very active. But when the drama starts in the house, then are you there to give them some counseling and direction? See? And I say, look at American stats today, 70% are not married. 70% are not married. 15 to 18% of them are all gays, right? So 70 is like that, not married, is either broken up, whatever happened, single parent, whatever, 70%. 18 to 20% is all gays and lesbian, and about 10% are married.
So these people thereafter become the rulers of the world. Can you see the mindset? What is the type of mind? They become the rulers of the world. Then how do you expect any goodness to prevail? The whole mind is all upside down. Right seems to be wrong, wrong seems to be right. Every corruption works with them. Every corruption works with them. So how can the whole thing go? How can the earth go well? How can the land go well? How can the world go well? So we're talking about this nafs, you know, and when it's not guided, when it's just given the open rope, no rope, no supervision, nothing restriction, no restriction. What happens to you? Total. It's a lost case. Imagine a dog now. It's got no owner, no leash on the neck. And it's left wild. What happens to it? It's in a pitiable condition. It may seem that it's got so much of comfort. But I ask you, does it find any sympathy? Does it find completion, fulfillment, satisfaction? It doesn't find it. So that's what happens to the man. When there's no supervision, there's no guidance, there's no direction, nothing. That's what happens to them. We think, no, give him satisfaction, give him all what he desires for. We didn't get it, he must get it. But then, the second level of the nafs, I showed you the first level, right? Inna nafsa la ammaratun bisu. The second level of the nafs is now, the man was a little bit concerned of Allah Ta'ala, worried. A'ta wattaqa wassaddaqa bil husna. He's concerned of Allah Ta'ala. Then, though he started off from a very poor beginning, nafs was just riding him, you know, it was dragging wherever. But he had the consciousness of Allah Ta'ala. So it gave him some promotion. Now, he's nafsul lawwama. That self-reproaching soul. That soul is reproaching him. In other words, his mind is always reproaching him. But you didn't do this right. This you caused it. Big way you caused it here. This, you know, you were not right. So the soul is reproaching him all the time. It's reproaching. And this is held in esteem in the sight of Allah Ta'ala, because Allah Ta'ala takes an oath in the name of this reproaching soul. Self-reproaching. Look at Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullahi alayhi. He lent someone, a Majusi, a fire worshipper, he lent him 40,000. So 40,000 converted into rands today. I think he's working, Ali Sahib was saying, Ali Suleiman was saying, about 1 million, huh? 1 million. Calculations, Taji Radhi. So 1 million is gone, right? Imam Sahib thought maybe this person is forgotten about the whole thing. So let me just give him a reminder. Maybe he's in a stuck. Or maybe he's forgotten. If he's forgotten, I'll remind him. If he's stuck, I'll give him some more respite. So as Imam Sahib is approaching the person's house, you know, in his eastern countries you'll find, on the roads you'll find dung, all that, right? So mistakenly, Imam Sahib's shoes got messed up. So as he shook his shoes to get the dung off, some of the dung got into the wall of this Majusi. So Mohanifa Rahmatullahi called for him. He said, you know, I came for some other reason. But now my whole intention has changed. My concern now is, see, this is what happened to me, and some of the dung went on to your fence. Now even if I wipe it, the stain is going to be there. Even if I have to wipe it. Now I have brought this type of a discomfort to you. And now, for the sake of Allah, please make maaf, have that 40,000, 1 million, one shot. You got the heart to do it, brother. With all the old age and everything you do, you got the heart to do that. Just that little bit of discomfort to that fire worshipper, not even a Muslim. But I brought that little bit of inconvenience. See, this is only possible if the nafs has come, elevated itself to the level of lawama, reproach. Why you do this? Did you do it right? You're so conscious of Allah Ta'ala that you're shouting yourself. Instead of looking at his fault and a third person's fault. I don't say you don't correct him. When you know the person and you know he's going to take it, right? So you give him some advice. Sorry, that's a different thing. But you're not at a position that you're so consumed with others that you're disconcerned about yourself. So the small thing that you are doing or the big thing that you are doing, you didn't do this right. I barabar ni malaya. This is not right. That is not right. Why do you do this? One person is telling me, you know, Alhamdulillah, Allah gave me some tawfiq. Now if I look in the street, look, someone I'll try my best to look down. But if I can, you know, I can see for the side of the eye that someone is walking past, now I won't look. Because one time I made that mistake, I said, no, let me look. Then I found a girl walking there. And mistakenly, it was an old hag, you know. I astaghfirullah, you know, I had to look at this. You know, something else. But I said, no, see, that nafs is playing with me. The nafs is playing with me that I saw this now. I spoiled my eye to look at this thing here. If it was a young girl or something, it was something else, you know. Now I spoiled my eye to look at this thing here. See, the nafs, the game is playing with me. So he said, now I don't even look. All right, I'll walk safely, I'll drive safely, but I won't look. Deliberately, I won't look. Where I need to look, I will look. But otherwise, I won't cast a second glance. Because if I look at someone, and that beauty sticks in my heart, then to delete it, it's going to be a problem. And number two, I thought to myself, that what's the business, what business do I have to look at that girl, or to that person? Do I have a business to look? When there's so much of chances that it could be a woman, and she could attract me, now why must I look at her? What does that need for me? So you see this self-reproaching, this attitude of self-reproaching. And how much can be earned just in the self-approaching? Small things, big things, but you're reproaching yourself. Abdul Karim Jili, rahmatullah, very great alim, great buzurg of his time. See, there must have been something very great in the self-reproaching soul for Allah Ta'ala to take an oath in the name of the self-reproaching soul. But why didn't you complete your daily routine of Quran Sharif today? Why? You could eat nicely. You could sleep nicely. But when it came to the recitation, you didn't complete it. Why didn't you complete it? So that's the self-reproaching soul. Everything else you could do your business, you could eat well, you could talk well. But then, in all that equation, if someone had to take the knock, you let the Quran Sharif take the knock. Why? What's wrong with you? The eating went well, the friends went well, everything else went. But the knock had to come onto the Quran Sharif. Where's your brains gone? See, now that's that self-reproaching soul. Everything you could find a time, but you couldn't find time for this. So Allah likes it, and He's taken an oath. La uqsimu bin nafsil lawwama. So you see this Abdul Karim Jili, rahmatullah alayh. So he's strolling near the harbor, and he sees some caskets of wine. Discovers that it is the caskets of wine of the Khalifa. 10 caskets, and he bust all 9. Came to the last one, he left it. Anyway, the Khalifa got to know that this is the work of Abdul Karim Jili, rahmatullah alayh. Summoned him, but what business you had to do with this? No. A Muslim should be enjoining the good and forbidding the wrong. With his hands, or with his tongue, I must do it. So I could do it, I found the chance to break this thing here. So what's wrong? What wrong have I done? So who authorized you to do this? King, the Khalifa is asking, but who gave you the authority to do this? You are the police. So no. Allah Pak directly gave me the authority to break this. Where? وَأَمُرْ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَنْهَا عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ. Forbid the wrong and enjoin the right. So Allah Pak instructed me, so I got the license and I got the authority straight from Him. But do you know there can be consequences? Yeah, I know about that. There can be consequences. If I do this, there are going to be consequences. Because the Quran says, وَأَمُرْ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَنْهَا عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ وَصْبِرْ عَلَى مَا أَصَابَكَ. Then in the process, you catch it, take it, would delight because tujhe lakri mili mere khatir. For my love, you got a hiding. Take it, what's wrong with you? For the dunya, got a hiding, alright, you can make a noise. But for the love of Allah Ta'ala, you got hiding, take it in the stride. Khalifa said, alright, then all the questions are answered, but one question is left. You bust 9, why you left the 10th one? See this self-reproaching. He said, I left the 10th one because after I had finished the 9, then my nafs began to say, my mind began to say, what a great person you are, you know. You was not even concerned that it belonged to the Khalifa, you didn't bust it. So what a bravado you are, you know. What a great person you are. So then I realized, this 10th one I'm going to bust now, is not for the sake of Allah Ta'ala, is for my self-admiration. My pride, my self-admiration. So this is not on. The king was so impressed, he cried, made Toba, said, never, I won't touch this. And I appoint you now to be the head of the police. He came right, see, the king came right, and he got even further promoted. See, this self-approaching, self-reproaching. Correct yourself. Keep correcting yourself. Reproach yourself. Why? I had to speak to this person here with that aggression. Why did I speak to him in that aggression? Why did I speak to him in that tone? I could have spoken to him lovingly, kindly, I sensed some aggression. I could have, like the advice of the Quran Sharif, Salamun alaykum la nabtaghil jahilin. I can see that this person is aggressive, he's not right, he's not in his right frame of mind. So the Quran Sharif is saying, politely, just move away, politely. You can see now, he's not in his right frame of mind. Politely move away. But why do you have to do this? So this can come right when you're going to reproach yourself all the time. So anyway, we're coming to this verse of the Quran Sharif, Ya ayatwan nafsul mutmainna. So you've seen that first level, entry level, then a slightly advanced level where you're reproaching yourself. Right? Now you worked on the nafs, kept on reproaching. When you kept on reproaching, now you come to the level where you're that nafsa mutmainna. Now you only find satisfaction in the happiness of Allah Ta'ala. Allah Pak is not happy, you don't find satisfaction. No, I can't do this. Allah Pak doesn't like it. You know, how detestable you find number two to be. Disgusting, right? I have to change the examples. I know as a child, right, a child means until about the age of 15 or 20, you know, a liquor bottle, a Muslim won't want to even kick it. It's so disgusting in his sight. You won't even want to kick it. Now it's different. Now you're hearing some stories, ajeeb, you know, like you never heard. You don't even talk about it. It's not taken as serious as it used to be taken then. So now, that became the nature, it became naturally disgusting. Haram is naturally disgusting. You don't want to say, no, but some ulama said this and some, no, I don't want to chance it. If it's AIDS, right, it's AIDS. I said, well, some doctor says it's alright, 5-10%, let me go with them. Will you chance your life? Will you chance your health? You won't say that some people said this. No, man, good, reliable ulama are saying that this is not right. So I can't go with this. I can't go with this. Because, now his iman has progressed. When his iman has progressed, it's brought him to that level where he says, if Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi is telling me that leave out the areas of doubt, you know, because that will save your deen and your honor, then I must give it all my attention. The doctor told me that this is AIDS. I was so serious about it, that I didn't want to touch it. So my yakin is in him, and I don't have yakin in my Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. So it grows and it grows and becomes a reality in him. But this is doubtful. I don't want to touch it. You guys can do whatever you want, but I don't want to touch it. My Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam said that I must stay away from this. I don't want to hear now this person said halal, whatever. But I know a reasonable, good, righteous ulama are saying it's not permissible. So I won't want to touch this thing here. I don't want to see the consequences of this. You don't risk your life, you don't risk your health. So that soul is called nafsa mutmainna. You only find pleasure in what Allah Pak likes, what His Nabi Sam likes. So you only find the fulfillment, satisfaction. Therefore you call nafsa mutmainna. Ya ayatwa nafsul mutmainna. Now this ayat normally people read at the Qabristan. But it's not meant for the Qabristan. It is directed to that person who's progressed at that level. When it is his time to depart, then the malaika are addressing him. So it's not a general address. Anyway, ya ayatun nafsul mutmainna. Bhai, kya kar rahe tum? What are you doing? It's meant for that person who is elevated, is worked, promoted, came up right to that level. And then the malaika at the time of his death saying, ya ayatun nafsul mutmainna. Come back. Your Rabb is happy with you and you are well pleased with Allah Ta'ala. I ask you, is there anything greater that you can bargain for? Anything greater? You coming to Allah Ta'ala, coming back, in a state that Allah Pak is happy and you are happy with Allah. Allah Pak is happy.